go for it. Okay. Right. Okay, hopefully these technical problems with voice will keep us going. They may settle down. And if you do catch the voice okay, then thank you for sticking with it. If not, this podcast should hopefully help out. Anyway, thank you for coming to this first session in my 11 sessions on visualization, projection, and other things I throw in at the end. I think I just said 11 sessions. This one is just a, I would say brief, but we have 40-odd minutes worth of this, so we'll go with what we can. So, I'm Kia, for those of you who don't know me, and most of you I recognise. I'm Kia here on Second Life. I'm also Kia on the Children of Artemis forum. I do have my real name, which I'm open about, and that's Kevin Groves. You can find me Facebook. There's a link on my profile to my Facebook account. So, we'll just get straight into it. Oh, as usual, for those who don't know, if you have any questions, throw them in local chat as we go. If you need me to repeat something because the Second Life voice is playing up, do so. I've got no problems with that. If you want clarifications, say again, just throw in local chat. If you want to IM me, feel free if you don't want it broadcast to the world. If you haven't got any questions now, that's fine. You don't have to come up with anything. You can always catch me here or on all the other mediums that I've just broadcast. Catch me anytime. I'm always open to discuss any aspect of my path and any problems anyone has. So, let's start. Visualization. That's the primary subject of these talks. It means many things to many people, and in these sessions I discuss my personal experiences on visualization, leading through to projection. You could refer astral projection, but there's the varying types of etheric and mental and so on. And these sessions about how these tools become part of my life, and how I just make use of them. Now, for those of you who don't know me, as I said, I'm Kia. I follow a solitary path. I have done since I was around 7, although I wasn't fully aware at that point of my path. I would point you to a longer interview that I did for Tudley and Penry's radio show last year, and that's on tudleyandpenry.podbean.org. I can't remember. Let me just check. It's in the notes. So it's .com. That's good. But, in short, I follow the Egyptian goddess Salket. Let me just type that. That is my goddess's name in anglicised form. Her Egyptian form is Sekhet, which I tend to only use for formal address. Now, I say I started my path around the age of 7. That's when I was aware something was there and someone's typing something. I can't quite see who. Oh, it could be just me. It's laggy a bit with typing. Now, it wasn't until I was in my early 20s when my path was fully underway and I started to make use of visualization. the mainly, and as I think I was talking with Tawny earlier, books is tend to be where we come through, and that's primarily where I started too. Okay, I think we got some voice issues there. Enough for one person. Hopefully others are still hanging in. We shall see. Now, from a variety of books and from my goddess's guidance, I progressed along the route of visualization. For me, I didn't know what visualization was until good 10-15 years into the path. I've always been an imaginative person. It's, you know, children generally have a good imagination, and that imagination and creativity has progressed into my adult life. And then it wasn't until my early 20s that I discovered there's this word called visualization for making use of daydreams, which is what most people first experience with visualization, as a passive form of visualization, going to the active form, a creative form, later on. So it's because of this creative daydreaming aspect that I picked up on this, and my goddess decided that I'm pretty good at it, so let's use that as the primary tool. Now, I would say picking up the books are great, but it's a very practical thing. And surprisingly, and people seem to think this is visualization is a difficult subject, it's not. You're surprisingly, you are probably doing it the technically visualization, you are doing it all the time. But I'll come on to that in a second. I'll just continue with a little bit of what else I do, especially as a part of these sessions. Now, I do these sessions, as I said, to explain and talk about my experiences. That is because about 2 or 3 years ago now, if it's that long, it probably is, my goddess set me the task to explain to people the experiences and teaching she's given me throughout my life. My goddess demands this, so I do it for her. And I enjoy it. I do enjoy talking, as a few people have noted. Wabe isn't here, so she's the usual one to mention it. Now, these sessions are all self-contained, although they do progress in theme, and generally if you do miss a few, and if you tell me you've missed a few, I will sort of backtrack, and of course I'll also give out the notes. Now, as I mentioned, both visualization and projection are my tools. They are my tools of choice. Essentially, I've veered to non-physical working about 15 years or so ago. I used to do all the usual physical stuff: circle, razor circle, cast circle, this, that, and the other physically. But because I was introduced to a number of different methods, as I say, I'm solitary, I picked up a lot of different pieces of information from different systems. Now, because this was back in the early 90s, for me there wasn't a lot of occult material around, so I tended to get involved with books from, well, involved, I didn't get involved with any system. I found books on different systems, and one of the early ones was Chaos Magic and Hermeticism. Chaos Magic led me towards visualization because astral magic was a fairly significant part of the I wouldn't say the system. Chaos Magic is not about systems, it's about breaking systems and doing what you want. But there was an emphasis on astral magic, and that appealed to me because of the creative aspect, as I was saying. Now, one of the most important things, and it's been a bit of a bane, I think some of you might know, but I've been writing my autobiography, which is going to be published in November. At the launch date will be the Real Life Witchfest International in Croydon in November. Now, what became very evident there, and is something I tell everybody frequently, document everything. You have no idea how useful that can be. It would have been very useful for the book. I have kept a journal for 20 odd years, but I haven't documented everything. Now, what I have found with visualization and projection, when you are working with dream work, documentation is key. Now, as we go through with the other sessions, then I'll elaborate more on why that is important. But from a very early outset, keep a dream journal. It's really useful. I think it's a practice for about the last decade, but I actually keep my Book of Shadows with me all the time, so that I can always jot something down when it occurs to me. I have an appalling memory. Now, let's continue. Now, the visualization, and we will that's the subject of the classes, so I shall jump into this a little bit more. Now, some of the key things, and again I'll elaborate more on this in each session as it becomes applicable, but the keys to visualization are open-minded, acceptance, no preconceived ideas. I would recommend some kind of a naive child's mind approach. And as I said about visualization is something that's not complicated, everybody visualizes. Let's give you some examples. You cast a circle, if that's your method, and you may see in your mind the line that you're drawing. Now, is that a real thing or is it not? If it appears to your mind, then let's say it is real. You have a daydream. Is that real or is it not? It's possibly real. You get certain parts of, if you take dream interpretation for example, there are the two sides where you have organic dreams which are just nonsensical mashings of what you've seen on TV and been through for the day that the mind is just shuffling around to sort out, and then there's the symbolic dreams where they actually do mean something. To me, even dream interpretation is a form of visualization. Visualization, to me, encompasses the whole of the mindscape. Likewise with scrying. Descrying and any other form of divination. Cards, runes, tea leaves, palmistry. In a way, that is visualization. It is seeing imagery that is conjured up by the shapes, the slight meditative state that you would have while you're doing these processes. Visualization covers many things. So when I say you are probably doing it, you probably are. I don't think as a human you cannot exist or cannot be function without some form of visualization occurring, because as a creature we are highly imaginative and creative. What it comes down to, and what I think most people refer to as visualization in the real sense of the word, is a creative form to create imagery that's down to your desire. Now, I think it's in the third or fourth session where I discuss creative visualization, wish fulfillment, as I tend to call it, and a few books refer to it. That is a different technique. I can give you a very good way to get yourself started. Generally, mental exercises of some kind are useful. Of these, any kind of meditative state is useful. If you take any of these guided working kind of things, they are useful. Many people fall over at the first hurdle with those, especially I do, and I always have. Guided workings for someone else, by someone else, have never worked for me, because that is not the way I work. And I'll give you an example of one of the big blockages with guided workings that you may pick up from a CD. And it's something I'll also return to in a later session. As most of these sessions go, you usually end up being told you're in a forest and you're walking along a forest path and a such and such occurs. For me, I'm not a foresty person, I'm a water creature, I prefer the sea. So normally, and this is common for anybody who experiences these kind of problems with guided workings, is that your mind will begin to wander and take you somewhere else. Perfectly normal, absolutely normal. And then, but most often, someone will think, oh, this isn't quite right. The guided working says I should be doing this, but I'm not. I'm going off this way. And then they feel that's a failure, and they say, I'm no good at this, and then either stop, or just, well, generally stop, or just get frustrated and then stop. I would always say with those, at the very outset, go with where your imagination goes. If you're in a, it says you're in a forest, and you may start in the forest, but then suddenly end up floating off, go with it, don't stress, enjoy where it takes you, because that's where you need to be. But that is a common blockage or fault that I experience with many people who have issues with visualization. Don't worry. Now, another really good exercise to get you going, and as I say, this is a practical kind of, I wouldn't say tool, but for some people, creating imagery is tricky. Daydreaming is fine. Doodling is a good way. In fact, I actually recently saw on the BBC News website there was an article about memory and clenching your fist. The act of clenching your fist seems to improve memory. I can't quite remember what the article said, but I think it was along the lines of that the nerve pulses in your hand, I think it was, not sure which hand it was, simulates the opposite side of the brain where imagery, memory thing, and it sort of all works together. Now, I would also say that writing or drawing or doodling, I have experienced better imagery. So, doodle. And that's quite a common thing. A lot of people seem to doodle while they daydream, and that's a good thing to do. anything that can stimulate imagery, go for it. Another technique I've recently explored is taking some photos of in events, say a wedding you went to or a party you went to, where you see the various people in the photo, and to imagine that event with those people and how you and try to force an interaction. Don't remember the interactions that occurred during that event, but imagine you are still back in that event and then you go and do something different. For example, you know, now this is pretty mad, but say it was a wedding, and in fact during like one of the best man's speech or something, you stand up and start dancing. What is the reaction, the imagination of the reaction of the various people? Because you know them, you have that knowledge of their personalities, and that can enhance the reaction you would gain for your imagination. But it's any of these kind of things that just get the juices flowing to create situations in your mind that you can act out. Even just the mundane of, say, a job interview, something that everybody finds probably quite stressful. Quite often people run through their mind, well, let's hope they don't say this or do say that. That is visualization in a way. In fact, it could even be classed as wishing that they didn't do this, but those affirmations or wishes we'll discuss another time. But it's acting out in your mind a situation. Now, that is still visualization. But, and actually that's probably quite a creative form, because if you don't know the situation that's going to occur, how many people are there, who they are, what they're going to look like, the room or whatever, that's being very creative. And you may even surprise yourself and actually get it right. So, other things we'll discuss in the sessions. Let's think, what have we got? In the next one in particular, I sort of go through the varying methods I use to achieve the correct state of mind for initiating visualization, and those are sort of meditative states. I think in the next one after that, I do in fact go through a guided meditation, which I've just discredited as not being of any use to anybody. But in that particular one, I explain the guided meditation that I've developed for myself, which I deconstruct to explain how I came up with this, so that it might inspire those that are stuck for ideas, because, as I said, set guided meditations are difficult or unpredictable on how you can construct your own or how to approach the construction of your own. Then we'll go through onto another session on the practical uses of visualization, and as I say, that's wish fulfillment and just generally making it serve a purpose, as this is what we want it to do. It's not just for a cheap bit of homemade film in your mind. And then I'll also discuss some of the other big things that can go wrong with it. Now, there's no real risks that I found involved with visualization. As such, I'm still here and I've done it long enough, and I'm sure if you've been messing around with it, it's not a problem. But what I do say, and I've had this conversation quite a few times, some people have said, I want to use visualization to, say, boost my self-esteem, or because I'm depressed, I need something to motivate me or get me out of depression. First off, that's a big problem. You are talking with things that are working within the mind. Now, for visualization, my personal feel is that you are working on a variety of levels depending on what you are doing. Some things, aspects, are just your subconscious. Some things are your consciousness. Some things are external. And some things go even further and are extremely external, multiplanar, but then you'll start to progress into sort of projection ideas. Now, the problem here is if you are in a depressed or anxious state, the mind is likely to stir up some dark or negative thoughts or emotions. Some things you're not likely to want to encounter, and this kind of mental working, this mindscape work, or whatever you want to call it, can amplify this bad imagery, which can send you even into a worse state. So, and I'll come back to this in the next session when I discuss this in more depth. Be careful that you don't do any of this kind of stuff if you are in a anxious state or in any of the other states I've just mentioned, because it really won't help you. Now, other sessions will continue about halfway through. I think session 5 or 6, I'll start to explore the other end of visualization, and for me that's projection. For me, they're two ends of the same spectrum of mindscape work. Now, with projection, I'll explore the varying techniques to achieve projection, lucid dream, and those kind of out-of-body experience techniques. And then we'll explore the other realms, these varying projection forms. The last few sessions, we shall be looking at a few things that I've just tagged on the end, one of which is astral magic. As I say, I tend not to use physical ritual anymore, so much of my magic is based around words, intent only, either written form or vocalized form. So from there on, I'll be exploring amulets, vocalized magic, and thought forms are another good subject that some people find quite heavy going, but they are a good combination of visualization and astral magic. And up to the very last session, where I shall be discussing a new one on healing, which sort of ties in with the fortnightly healing circle that I run with here on Second Life in this sim. It's on the Monday around about now, about 1 p.m. every other Monday, so it won't be tomorrow, it'll be the following week. So there's a fair bit I do seem to cover, and of course with all of this, although my text is quite extensive, I think we are now talking around somewhere between 60,000-70,000 words on my notes. I do wing it quite a bit often. In fact, this session has been completely winged. As you can probably tell, because it doesn't bear much relation to the text. But what I do seem to do is that if anybody during these sessions has any particular sort of leanings towards a particular aspect of these topics, then I'm very happy to gear those sessions along those lines. After all, you're here because you want to hear something useful. So you can all read, so if you want to stick with the text is there. But this is, I wouldn't say I do expect some kind of feedback from those listening. It's not a problem, that's not what it's about. If anyone has a particular aspect that they want to discuss openly, then I'm happy to gear any of the sessions towards that direction, if it's of any use. So quite frequently I will ask if anybody has anything they want to discuss. Everyone's being quiet tonight, so that's not a problem. As long as people can pick up some useful bits, I'm happy to just keep talking. But as I said earlier, the primary thing is to keep a dream journal, a dream diary, document all the time. Read everything. Anything you can get your hands on, read it. Question it. Pretty much what you would probably do for any path, to be honest. And just go for it. Experiment. There's only been a couple of bad experiences I've had, but I'm still here. In fact, that's one of the other sessions. There's a later one, I think session 10, might be session 10, on evocation, where I do describe a particularly bad experience with an evocation going horribly wrong. But then again, I'm still here, so the worst it can do is just slightly send you crazy in the head. And I hope that's all it can do. I've not had anything seriously bad happen, but I've been lucky. So, let's think, what are we doing? We've got another 20 minutes for me to talk. Oh, wow. If anybody actually does have anything to say, then I'm all ears. This text is actually quite large, but as I said, I've just winged it all, so I've covered it slightly quicker than I would have thought had I read through it. But I can just quickly scan to see if there is anything. Journal, yes. Solitary. I think you are probably all solitary. I don't think any of you that I recognise are coven based, so it is a hard path, but I think that's what adds to the fun of it. Now let's have a quick nose. I think I've said pretty much everything for this one. Oh, I can give you a couple of examples for the projection stuff. Is anyone actually really interested in the projection side? I know quite, I think Merlin, you are, aren't you? Okay, right. Right, so I can have a quick cover of some of the projection stuff. And I think I mentioned this actually in the text. There's a few books. In fact, there's one book, and that's actually my favourite book, and I don't mention it in the text. Okay, visualisation. Right. Mostly visualization. Okay. Now, this is one I actually... Okay, visualization. Now, the amulet stuff is very good for later on because that's extremely useful for... Well, the amulet stuff is more visualized forms of amulets using sigils and words. But there's a superb visualization protection ritual, spell, or whatever you want to call it, that I have always used. I mention it frequently in my text, and that's the A Dog of Defense spell. It is the most potent protections method I've ever used. In fact, I have now continuously used it every year for the last 15 years. I can't remember where I found it. It was probably on the internet. But it's from the... and excuse the pronunciation of this lady's name, because I've never actually heard it vocalised by anyone. Dolores Ashcroft Norwicki. In her book, The Practical... Ritual Magic Handbook workbook. But it's, I think, and actually we just lost another one, probably down to voice. She was having issues earlier. But I find, in particular, visualization is superb for protection methods, mainly because you don't have to carry a whole load of amulets around with you. For, and I frequently refer to now runes. Now, I follow an Egyptian goddess, but I don't use hieroglyphs for amuletic use. I prefer to use runes because they are superb for visualization. They are very simple shapes. They are very quick and easy to formulate in the mind for when you need to use them. I give frequent ones that I use the most. The RAD symbol, the looks like the capital R. From what I've understood, and this has been a fair few years ago, the RAD symbol is to do with travel, and it's a fire-based symbol. So, fairly early on, and I still use this on occasion, is that I would project a visualized form of the RAD symbol ahead of me if I'm in the car. I'm just watching a van try and do a 3-point turn in the middle of the road, and I'm just hoping it don't hit my car. Anyway, just doing some strange things out there. Okay, I'm going to cast RAD out there to hope it gets the journey and not hit my car. But there, as I say, the runes are really useful for visualized, well, actually any form of use you want to use runes for. I tend to use them for protection. I don't really find them any use for anything else. And again, other forms of visualization, thought forms, and I have a whole session later on towards the end on that whole subject. Another very useful visualization technique that is very close to my car. Stay away. Where was I? Oh yeah, thought forms. A very powerful tool. Now, they are difficult and require some discipline, but nevertheless they are a useful tool for not quite so. It's a sort of, in a way, a combination of visualization and maybe etheric projection, depending on how you use it. But the creation of a disembodied spirit, which is an extension of yourself, to go off and do a task, has many benefits. Oh, let's see, what else have we got? Ah, yes, another one. Now, I have a whole session on this with, I think, during the practical session, and that's visualized tools. As I say, my primary session methods are non-physical, so I tend to not use physical tools. I have a physical wands and brooms and all of that, which is great, they stay in this room. But should I require a wand when I'm out, I can always use my finger, which is an extremely good pointing device. Should I need to use a wand to direct my intent, your finger should never be neglected. But should I need a wand with its symbolism involved, I have created physical wands. I have explored and memorized in detail, excruciating detail, these wands and how they feel in my hand, how they the weight, the balance, the touch of the materials, the colour, the shape, every aspect. And I've obsessed on them to some extent. I've really become very focused on their design. Now, what that has done is that should I require this wand when I'm out and about, I can visualize it in my hand as if it was the physical thing. If I close my fist, I can feel the fabric of the handle in my skin, of my hand. I can feel the weight of it and the balance as I move it around. I can then visualize the length and it would be consistent. That takes a lot of practice, and it has proved useful. And as far as I'm concerned, it may be just my imagination, but it just feels and I react as if it is physically there. Other people can't see it, but that doesn't matter. To me, I can see it. If I open my eyes, I can see the visualized form of it in front of me. And that can be useful. Same way, I've got a collection of different tools that I would use in the same way. That's if I was working physically, which occasionally happens. Only, actually, there will be this Friday. It's midsummer, as far as I'm for me, and that's one of my primary festivals. So that's one of the few times I will do a physical ritual. That should be quite fun. I quite enjoy that. So rest of the time, it tends to be through visualization. I would say it's a combination of guided working and projection. I have a temple that I have created in my mind for the last 15 years. They're still doing the 3-point turn, it's unbelievable. And I tend to do all my working within this visualized space. It's a combination of visualization and projection. As I say, there's a fine line as far as I'm concerned. And because of that, I tend not to say it's one or the other. As far as I'm concerned, when I'm there, I am totally disconnected from all of the physical surroundings, and I am there physically. It feels, I can feel the ground beneath my feet. In fact, this is another aspect of visualization, and I'll cover this back in the session when it's applicable. But this temple of mine, because I've created an Egyptian temple, is in a desert. I hate sand, absolutely loathe sand, especially between my feet, my toes. It just makes me cringe, sand. I cannot go on a sandy beach unless I've got boots on and I've like taped the tops up. The moment I get sand between my toes, I just cringe. But, and this is the important bit, so that this temple in a desert is real to me, there is sand and it gets everywhere and it's annoying, but it's not spotless. It's not like here, like Second Life, where it's clean. Because there is sand there and I can feel it annoying between my toes, it's real, and I know that's how reality would be if I was there. Therefore, it is real because I can feel it. Some people create visualizations that are too clinical, too perfect, and then it's hard for them to believe the visualization is real to them. Now, for me, it's to create a convincing reality, you have to have everything, even the bits you don't like. So, you know, you gotta have, if I'm on a beach, it's not gonna be a pristine beach. There's gonna be a little bit of rubbish around. It's not gonna be perfect, because that's not how reality I feel would be if it was physically real. So, for me, that's an important aspect of visualization. I have to have what I would feel as real as possible. And then when I'm there, I do sink into it and it becomes real enough for me to accept that this is real. Because then it then becomes difficult. Which is the real? This reality or the other reality? As I think, I don't know enough about Aboriginal beliefs, but they are along those kind of lines. The waking world is a dream. It's what is real. Yeah, I could keep going on, but I think I've filled up that time now. If there's anything else you dare even want to ask, then that's fine. I'm okay. We can keep going. If not, then thank you for coming along. I shall be posting this podcast up and the notes within the next few days. You've got the notes already. Should have the website address, or you can just Google my Kia Heiki name and that should find me. But I shall stop recording now, and we can continue the nattering. Thank you.